The date is July 6th, 1990, and we're watching Jetsons, the movie. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Teddy 2 to my Elroy Jetson.
Hello everybody, I'm Colin Stewart.
Going up, going down, going in! Gotta try to get that ball past you. Well, this week, we continue our Wish You Were Here in the new year that we're doing our posthumously released movies, and we're looking back at July 1990, when the movies in theaters were Total Recall, Bird on a Wire, Back to the Future Part 3, Frankenhooker, which I probably mentioned back in our Dick Tracy episode, I believe, as a movie I have actually seen. And, of course, our movie for today, Jetsons the Movie, which earned $20.3 million on an $8 million budget. So, it doubled it. And then some, yeah.
Sure. Well, as always, this movie came out on my birthday and is 4 years younger than I am, so there will be spoilers ahead. If you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
I'll accept spoilered. Why not?
Spoilered, yeah.
Yeah, I make up words all the time. I know, listening back to myself in the edit, that I say the wrong words all the time. I have learned a lot about myself and how I communicate, and it's poorly. But so, taglines. This week I only have one tagline that appears on the poster of this movie. It's not very exciting, I gotta say. It's disappointing. Here we go. The first movie from the family that's truly ahead of its time.
I give that a thumbs down.
Yep. Yep. Very disappointing. And doesn't say much, so let's go to Colin and get a 60-second synopsis.
Alrighty then. After receiving a promotion to vice president of a fraught Space Sleep Sprocket's asteroid mining colony, George Jetson, his boy Elroy, daughter Judy, and Jane, his wife, leave their old lives behind and move to the asteroid so that George can put his advanced button-pressing skills to use. At first, the Jetson family is upset. Elroy can't play basketball, and Judy can't go on a date with a guy she just met who obviously just wants to get in her pants. But once they arrive, Elroy makes new friends, and Judy almost immediately finds a new guy to give it up to.
Yeah,
for George, things at the plant get off to a bad start after saboteurs derail his first presentation to Mr. Spacely and the board of directors. Bird soon learns that this has been an ongoing issue and that he is but one of a string of recent VPs. George sets out to find the culprits, and at the same time, so do Elroy, his robot pal, and their furry friend. They come to discover that the plant is built on top of an underground world inhabited by an alien race called the Bungies, and they have been sabotaging the plant to save their homes and lives. When George finds out, he finds the courage to stand up to Mr. Spacely, stop the operation, and coerce him into entering an agreement with the Bungies whereby they will operate the plant in a way that spares their homes and sell the sprockets to Spacely at a fair price. Having saved the day, George and company return to their old lives. The end.
Yay, and they lived happily ever after. Oh boy, The Jetsons is one of those TV shows that was on at 3:30 every afternoon when I got home from school. You know, I have spent many an hour in front of a Hanna-Barbera cartoon, whether it be Flintstones, Jetsons, The Snorks, Huckleberry Hound, a Yogi Bear, any of those kind of cartoons. I'm there for it every time. And Jetsons was one of those ones, though, that I was especially fond of. when I go back to like cartoons I used to like really gravitate towards as a child, it was always the ones that had like an element of magic or wishfulness, or, you know, with the science and technology of the future. Like, I always loved those Disney cartoons that are like the home of the future, and it's this push button home. Like, they're these random cartoons. And so that's why I love the Jetsons, is because of the fantastical nature of the science that's in the Jetsons. So this was one that I loved. And when a movie was coming out, oh my God, I was there for it. Back to the Future Part 3 was another one. I was in both of those theaters back in 1990. I was very excited about a Jetsons movie and loved the movie back then. And yeah, I'm glad to have watched it, because it has been a long time since I've seen this movie. And it's like, holy shit. It brought back some memories. So, Colin, Jetsons the movie, Hanna-Barbera, what is your history with all of that sort of stuff?
I'm a big Hanna-Barbera fan. Like, specifically, I loved the Flintstones when I was a kid. I came to the Jetsons later. Like, I was trying to think, because in my mind, like, the Jetsons and the Flintstones were always on. Like, I had Cartoon Network or whatever, yeah, like, Cartoon Channel when I was a kid.
Yeah. And sometimes the Jetsons Meet the Flintstones was on.
Yeah. and it never like, occurred to me that those cartoons are, like, 1960s cartoons.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, I've always loved Hanna-Barbera cartoons. I was more Flintstones than Jetsons, but I still enjoyed the Jetsons. I don't think that I've ever seen this movie the whole way through before now, though. I did, like, when, as I was watching it, there are things that, like, came, were coming back to me.
Okay, okay.
But, like, I didn't have, like, a big recollection of what the movie was actually
like. A weird fever dream, all these flashes coming
to
you.
Yeah, yeah. No, like, I immediately remembered that there was monster, like, not monster, but, like, aliens, like, sabotaging the planet.
Yeah.
But I couldn't remember, like, anything else that happened in the movie.
Yeah. Right on. Well, here we go. Let's jump into Jetsons the movie, directed by Joseph Barbera, William Hanna. And this is a credit out of 160 episodes now that I've never seen. Is we've got I don't know how to pronounce this. It's spelled Iwao Iwao Takamoto, but he's the supervising director. So is he babysitting Hanna and Barbera, or is it just to kind of make sure that their two ideas, is he kind of like the adjudicator of it all, and he's the impartial party that makes the overall decision? Supervising director, do you know what that is?
No, I would guess that, like, supervising director probably has to do with the animation.
Okay.
I especially think that because that sounds like a Japanese,
a very name, Japanese and, name, yeah.
And they Japanese typically do, like, a lot of the animation, especially for, like, big animated films, I find.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I would think.
But yeah. If I had seen just the first name, I might have questioned whether maybe it was, like, Scandinavian or something. But Takamoto kind of firmly tells me that, yes, there was probably some Japanese animators on this.
Yeah.
Well, it's produced by Joseph Barbera and William Hanna, and it's written by Dennis Marks and Carl Sauter. And so we open this movie on, like, Spacely's orbiting ore asteroid facility in the 21st century. And we get to see some electrical sabotage happens. This quick little cold open. And I love how this footage gets used, like, three times in this movie. This 120-minute movie, it's like, well, we'll just reuse the sabotage shit because, you know, we got the lightning guy on it. You weren't around for the lightning guy conversation back in Weird Science, but I think the lightning guy strikes again in Jetsons the movie. And boy,
that's
oh boy.
Kept the budget at $8 million.
Yeah. Just replay the same scene, like, yeah, 3 minutes of the movie right there. We just had to animate it once.
Yeah, I mean, I would gather that half the budget of this movie went to the like four scenes where they dabbled in 3D animation in 1990, but
We'll get to the animation first, though. After this cold open, we get our like opening credits song, a bit of a jazzed up version. I did watch the original opening to compare, and there the big difference is that Jane Jetson gets more of a feminist brushstroke in Jetsons the movie than she does back in the day, because back in the day, she took George's wallet. He goes to hand her like a dollar bill, and she takes the wallet. But in this one, she just kisses him goodbye. There's no money exchange happening. There's no hint at prostitution occurring in this moment between husband and wife. Or, you know,
she's still just heading to the mall.
Yeah, women still like, be shopping.
She's got to do in life.
That's like her full-time job. I mean, when they get to the asteroid, it's like they don't talk about Judy going to school. It's like they're like, but you can go hang out at the mall. So Judy is also going to be a full-time mall person like her mom? Is that just what the Jetson women are destined to be in life?
Yeah, I mean... I was trying to, like, figure out, like, from what I remember in the show, Judy seems like a high schooler.
Yes.
But in this movie, she seems like she's just, like, a freeloading, like, I don't know, college age.
She's a college dropout and burnout that's living in the basement, Yeah, she does kind of have a bit more of that attitude, that's for sure. And the other difference I noticed in the opening is that when he shoots them out of their out of the ship and to their destinations, see, this is something I've never understood about the Jetsons, is the magic finger. These domes just appear out of his fingertips. But for some reason in the movie version, Jane puts on like a partial helmet that then turns into the dome. It's this added little touch that they put on Jane for some reason, but I don't understand why they don't do it on any of the other Jetsons. He's got magic fingers. But it's the magic of the Jetsons. It's what I gravitate to. But we're meeting George Jetson, his wife, his son. Let's meet the cast. Let's talk about this cast, because we are here, of course, with a posthumously released movie. And it's actually two of the actors in this movie that it was released after they died. One of them, though, like practically died in the studio, man. He died at work. Yeah. So, I mean, that's our first person, and that's our lead actor. So, George O'Hanlon, George Jetson, the original George Jetson. Yeah, he suffered a stroke, and then he was in poor health, and he had memory problems, and he was practically blind, so they had to do line readings for him, and he had to repeat them back because he had no short-term memory. Like, they did his performance one line at a time, and he had a second stroke in the theater, like, in the studio that killed him.
Yeah.
And some... you know, voice artist had to come in just to record a last few lines for him.
Mel Blanc is Mr. Cosmo Spacely.
Also the OG actor. See, all these movie or TV series and movies these days that get credit for like bringing back the original cast and everything like that. This is almost completely an OG cast that we got going on here for this movie that came out 30 years after the series.
Mm-hmm.
But he's the other one also that died after the movie, or before the movie was released.
Yeah.
Was Mel Blanc. Yeah.
Penny Singleton plays Jane Jetson.
Also OG, yeah.
Tiffany plays Judy Jetson.
To a lot of controversy.
Yeah.
Because, like, the original Judy Jetson, she does have a couple lines in this movie that are...
Well, not only that,
she had recorded.
She reported... Judy Jetson.
Yeah, but then, a couple of the lines stayed in.
Yeah. Well, she also plays like the Janet Waldo. Oh yeah, Janet Waldo is the original actress's name. And she's also like the robot secretary or whatever.
Yeah.
I do think it's messed up that you would go through the trouble of everybody else keeping everybody else. But then you would cast Tiffany, who, like, in retrospect, like, what a weird choice. Like, a one-hit wonder, basically, to be in this movie. To yeah, try to, like, capitalize on her star now. Power.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, the thing is, they wanted to bring in Tiffany for the songs, but then they decide, well, just to make continuity, let's just have her record all the dialogue, too. So that, it was really controversial that they knocked out the original Judy Jetson, because they had her.
Yeah, I read that. I read that Andrea Romano, who is, like, she's, like, a very famous... like voice director, like she did Batman the Animated Series, like tons of DC stuff,
okay,
tons of WB stuff. But she did the voice direction for this movie. And when she found out that they recorded a bunch of those lines, she wanted to take her. She was so mad that she wanted them to take her name off the movie,
just right off. Yeah. Don't want it on there. Don't want to be associated with this travesty.
Yeah, and she was also with George O'Hanlon when he had that final stroke.
Oh, okay, nice. Yeah, I mean, it really is a kick in the nuts. I mean, like, whatever, it is what it is.
Patrick Zimmerman steps in as Elroy Jetson.
I don't know what the story is with why they didn't get the original Elroy.
He died before.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
I think he had signed on, but... he was in, like, very, very poor health, and he died before they started recording.
Oh, man, put him and George O'Hanlon in the same booth together. And...
Don Messick is Astro the Space Mutt. I don't know if that's her OG or not.
He's OG as well, and so is Rosie the Robot. Yeah.
Gene Vanderpyle, I'm going to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Ronnie Schell is Rudy 2, Patty Boish is Lucy 2, and Dana Hill is Teddy 2.
Yeah, yeah. And a shout out, because I love anytime he shows up, Frank Welker is in there making some squeaks and boops or something. I don't think it even lists who he is. And Brad Garrett making his film debut. And I believe he is Furby.
Wikipedia says Birdie for below.
Birdie. Is that okay.
Fergie, I'm assuming, is the kid.
Yeah. I wrote it down wrong then. I thought they had said Furby, Fergie, and Gertie. I didn't realize that he was Birdie or Burf, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rick Dees is Rocket Rick Ragnarok.
Oh, man. Rick Dees in the weekly top 40. Were you too young for Rick Dees?
I recognize the name, but I have no idea who that is.
Oh, okay. He was just one of those guys that he was one of those nationally syndicated guys. So every week he had like 4 hours that every radio station in this country picked up.
Where do I know Steve McClintock from?
That name does sound familiar.
That's Cosmic Cosmo, but I can't. I feel like I know him from something.
It just seems like one of those names that jumps out of credits anytime you see it, you know?
Oh, he's literally like not like he's a musician, but.
Oh.
Not from anything I recognize.
Okay.
I think that's like the major.
Yeah, that's it.
Those are the major ones.
Yeah. The movie, so we get some nice, subtle environmental messages, because that was something that was big in 1990, is we open this movie with Rosie the Robot and the robot parakeet that's hacking up a lung because of the smog. And so, hey, well, we've got to get ourselves above the smog.
I couldn't help but feel in the opening of this movie, I don't know if it was like maybe I was in a mood or something, but I feel like for all the happiness and like... you know, joy that this movie exudes, there's a real dark underbelly of, like, the world is seemingly gone to hell.
Oh, yeah.
They all, like, the smog is so bad that they just keep rising on poles. There's zero black people or any visible minorities. They must have, I'm assuming they all just got left behind.
Hey, they represented the blues the out there. We had some furry blues represented in this movie, so... you know, all the furries were seen in this one. Yeah, no, it really is. And I agree with that. As much as their society is like this utopia, they can fly around, they can, you know, pack things into a pill form and stuff their car in their car is light enough to hold and then stuff in a mail slot. Yeah, I mean, despite all that, yeah, it's smog. They're destroying environments of these other creatures on the asteroid. Like,
even though I get it, it's like, it's very much a product of its time of like, let's make fun of all these stereotypical gender stereotypes. But like, even the fact that George, he literally shows up to work and he's like, I don't even know what I do. I just press the button. It seems like a sad world that the Jetsons inhabit.
True, but it's funny that this 1990 movie, or interesting at least, that they tried to bring those 1960s sensibilities over with like just a little twist for the 90s. You know, they've got the environment, they have all the stuff that they had in the 60s, but then they have the environmental message packed on top of it. You know, they have the same opening, but Jane has her own money to spend at the mall, apparently. Like, you know, yeah. It's so.
But even that, and it kind of just goes to show how little time changed from 1960 to 1990, but how much time has changed from 1990 to now. Because it's like, yeah, from 1960 to 1990, they're just like, oh, yeah, let's be environmentally friendly. But now, this movie, like, reeks of, like, colonialism, like there's like just like
no black
like,
people,
like a lot of deeper themes are in this.
Yeah. Oh, it has roots. Yeah.
But even when George goes to work and he decides like, oh, traffic is jam packed. You know what? I'm gonna impersonate a police officer, mm-hmm. Yep. and then the police officer comes and he gets out of it by just like, oh, here, sir, please. Please, like, pop your dummy and you know, maybe you'll go to traffic school now. I was like, that's white privilege at its finest.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that's something he got out of by moving to the asteroid, because traffic school began on Saturday, but he was gone before Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, never realized just how much of a dangerous industrialist Mr. Spacely is. Like, he's outsourcing all this work to, you know, to the nearby asteroid, but he just doesn't give a fuck in this movie. He's just, like, he's ready to murder. He's ready. I mean, I don't know. Mr. Spacely is evil. But he's also the original Mr. Krabs. Rays!
Yeah. He's kind of like a mix between like Mr. Krabs and Merv Humdinger from Paw Patrol.
Yeah.
Like, I was a little bit shocked that by the end of this movie he doesn't end up in jail.
Yeah. Yeah, he should have. Yeah. Yeah, all he cares is about money. Oh boy. That Mr. Spacely. Now, I want to know why when George pushes the button to start everything up, it's such a big deal in the beginning of his workday, but when he actually gets to the asteroid, there's never any big, like, animation. I mean, if you're going to reuse a piece of animation, reuse the button pushing, because, yeah, any subsequent button pushing in this movie is just so anticlimactic compared to this beginning button push where, you know,
they built up the button thing so much,
mm-hmm.
like that I thought when he got to the plant there should have just been like this big glass room with a mm-hmm. solitary column with a gigantic gold button under a metal flap that he would have to let's start it.
Why aren't you thinking Hanna-Barbera? Come on. Yeah. Okay. Elroy Elevator or Mighty Ducks Triple Deke, which is the worst of the sports tricks out there?
I'm going to give it to the elevator because you're calling it right in front of your opponent, like right in front of their face. I know, I guess the flying V, they often do the little V signal behind the net before they go, but like, you know, I think the flying V might look a little bit more intimidating, at least.
Yeah.
The elevator.
It's like, that's your top move? Dude. Yeah, that's your best move. He said, and show us your best move. Like,
can you only shoot at the top? Like, what if the guy stays high? Do you shoot low then?
I would scoop under him. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But I think the Teddy 2's extendo arms are definitely some sort of cheating.
Oh, for sure. That's performance enhancement. You shouldn't be allowed that.
Yeah. Somewhere in the Spaceball rule book, there has got to be something that says, wait, your arms cannot be longer than your body. You know?
There has to be a traveling rule for arms. Like, your arms are only allowed to travel, like, a human arm length in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but see, but then we get into some sort of discrimination situation where, you know, but now we're being anti-robot. Why does it have to be the human arm?
Robots aren't people.
I mean, what happens if you're some weird...
They don't have rights.
They don't have rights? But what if you're some octopus creature that's playing baseball, and your reach just happens to be twice the length of a human arm? See?
That's true.
Yeah. I don't know.
Fine. Well, I mean, at least I think we should say that if your arm extends half a chord away, you know, there should be some sort of handicap put on you or some sort of
restriction. Yeah,
especially if you can then grab the ball and launch it for like cross court and score a perfect you know, nothing but net shot.
Oh yeah, he could have probably slam dunked it without moving. Mm-hmm. Just reach it over.
Swish, that was the word I was looking for.
Swish. I was surprised, because I did not remember this movie that well, just how much music they try to cram into this movie.
Yeah, I was done with Judy, like, the minute pretty fast. She appeared on screen. Like, I could have done with zero Judy Jetson in this movie.
Yeah, like, because the first thing she does is steal money from her dad, and it's like, okay, so this is how we're going to be Judy. This is how we're going to start this off. Okay. But
even also, like, it's totally turbulent! Like, all this, like, weird... I don't know. It just reminded me, I guess, of the 90s, but...
Yeah. Well, and...
So gross.
I don't understand the concert, right? You know, here's one of our opportunities to just throw a pop song in, because why not? And she meets the Cosmic Cosmo, or whatever the fuck his name is. And so... Like, he's Bruce Springsteen and she's Courtney Cox, he just plucks her out of the audience to dance with her, kisses her, and then says, hey, you're going on a date with me. You have no choice. But now she's his girlfriend? Like, because she does refer to him as her ex-boyfriend at one point to the weird blue guy. Or does Judy just fall hard for everybody?
Yeah, I think Judy just falls fast.
Yeah.
And hard.
Yeah, that's got to be what it is. Like, he legitimately just wanted to, like, take her out one night. But you're plucking someone out of the audience. She's a 16-year-old girl, man.
I know. Like, Cosmic Cosmo is toxic masculinity at his fine. Like, he's basically a rapist. Like, he's like...
Yeah. But it's not fair. She had a date with him, Dad. How could you go and get yourself promoted, you son of a bitch? It's funny, because as I go through my notes, it's like, oh, I've got, you know, all these fun notes and everything. And, oh, God, Judy is so dramatic. You know, like, that's how my notes go. Oh,
little,
I've had enough of Judy.
A little sad song in the mall.
Yeah, where they can't decide whether she's actually singing it or not, because as she's going up in the elevator, she's singing, but
she's singing.
Then she's not in the garden. Yeah,
I noticed that too. Yeah. And she's all like, "Oh, I'm never gonna trust a man again," and then like runs into a guy a minute later and is like,
"Whoa, yeah, watch where you're going, you, oh,
dummy." I totally thought that guy, I didn't remember what happened with that guy, I totally thought that guy was going to end up being some sort of bad guy by the end of the movie.
No, that would have took too much overthinking for Jetsons the movie.
20 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, this is a movie that I got a kick out of when they pull up to their new home. The sign outside says Century 2200. And it's like, well, no, that's not how centuries work. Like, you're telling me that the Jetsons is 100,000 years in the future if it's Century 2200. It should just be Century 22 Realty. See, it's little things like that they should have picked up on. It's the button in the middle of the room with the flap and the gold and the... That's the stuff they needed in this.
Yeah.
But the computer animation stuff. I mean, I have to bring that up because although it's kind of cool to see in this movie, and it was cutting edge and all that, there's such a simplicity to the animation that it's like the hand-drawn animation looks so much better detail-wise than the computer anime. Like, as they fly by their new home, it's how is that exterior this interior? Like, it makes no sense. It's so simple. It's flashy, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, the computer stuff, you're right. Like, the mixture of 3D and 2D didn't jive.
Yeah.
In this movie. And I don't know. I guess, like, it's like I have to always remember, like, it's 1990, so what do I expect? But I don't know. It just also, like, wasn't that good. Like, it wasn't, like, I would almost say, like, The Last Starfighter was more impressive than what I saw in the Jetsons.
Yeah, this was like the Money for Nothing video. You know, if you've ever seen that one, Dire Straits. Money for Nothing. Oh, well, it's like the one in the Weird Al video. Yeah, like in UHF when we watched that. That's a spoof of that Money for Nothing video. But yeah, it's just... Yeah, it wasn't necessarily needed, but I like the swing. I appreciate the swing. Yeah. It's just 1990 let me down, though.
Yeah.
I mean, would Jetsons work as like a 3D computer animated movie?
I think now it would, but to be honest, like one of my biggest disappointments with this movie, and I can understand why they didn't do it because of the time, but it's like... Like, a few years later, they did the live-action... Like, the first live-action Flintstones movie is, what, 93, I feel like? Somewhere around there?
Yeah, it should be. Well, maybe a... Yeah.
I kind of just feel like they obviously went in the direction of, like, we want to bring back the OGs because they did, like, the revival, like, the new episode revival in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the mid to late 80s. And so I can see why they, maybe there was just like love for those like specific voices, but I don't know. This is one of those things that I feel like would never happen these days. They would have just immediately went to like a live action version and had those voices appear as like radio ad somewhere or whatever. So people would be like,
yeah.
And that's kind of what I wish they would have done instead.
Mm-hmm. Well, and another thing that I could have done without them updating was the rap song. We didn't necessarily need inclusion of the Sprocket rap. What a terrible rap. And how dare you say that your rap is a rap while you're rapping, because it is not. Yeah. Like, they name drop that it's a rap to make sure you know it's a rap, because clearly it is not. Like, yeah. And all I could think about during that rap too was, oh my god, George O'Hanlon is being fed lines one at a time. Like, that's why it doesn't match any kind of beat whatsoever.
I'm gonna guess that was recorded by the fill-in.
Oh, yeah? Yeah?
One of the things I didn't really understand is, like, after they get there and George has the big thing and the grungies sabotage it and there's sprockets flying all over the place and, you know, Elroy has his hero turn saving Teddy, too, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're like, best friends now. Yeah.
And they're best friends now, but, like, I was just thinking, like, he's a robot. Like, would he, like, I didn't see a, like, it didn't seem like he was at risk of getting crushed. Like, I don't know, if I'm in this world, am I risking my human mortal life
Yeah,
to
we're a
save
little
a...
spongier. Yeah, we tear easier. Yeah, I feel like Teddy might be able to get put back together. I don't know. I mean, like,
And also,
I
Teddy,
don't know.
where's
I
your
don't.
arms?
Yeah, pull
Where's
yourself
your
to
long arms
safety.
now, bro?
Yeah. But I also don't understand, like, Teddy One seems to have a sense of mortality or something. He's afraid of everything. Like, everyone else goes down into the pit to look for George. Teddy One doesn't go. He's calling down from up above. Do you see them? You know, like, it's like, no, I gotta be with my family. Why is he so scared to push the button? Well, this plant
I
could
mean,
run
just
with
that he,
one person.
yeah,
You're
he.
now paying a vice president.
Yeah, that was my thought too. Is like this robot could do it all. What do
Yeah.
you need George for?
Yeah, so I mean,
He
maybe
has
if
one
you.
defect. He will not push the button.
Yeah, so maybe if Teddy 2 gets sliced in half with a sprocket, like maybe he's in trouble because this kind of robot can't be put back together for some reason, because Teddy 1 definitely acts like he could die any day now.
No.
But, you know, one thing that, I didn't notice was, once again, not really any sponsors, but at least this week they tried. So I'm gonna do a little sponsorship corner.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah. I know, it's been a rough go with sponsors these days. Well, always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week, Jetsons the Movie is brought to you by Inflaticop, the Galaxy Galleria, Multi Movies, and the Fly-In Movie Theater, the 1984 Antique Shop, Star Mart, Laser-opolis, Roboto Pet Shop, Gaunatron, and of course, Spacely Sprockets. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Okay, now, when everything starts going haywire at the plant, why does the sprocket count start going down again?
I didn't get that either. It makes
I
no
mean,
sense. That's not
those
how it works.
sprockets are still made.
Yeah, it would just the counter would just stop presumably because I'm assuming that the counter is counting like boxes.
Well, at the speed they're coming out, absolutely, it's got to be right. But they're saying specifically they're 1 millionth sprocket, not box of sprockets.
Yeah, so literally
But
all like there was tons all those sprockets that are flying and threatening to kill Elroy and Teddy too are all they all count.
they're all good sprockets, yeah. They're valid. I mean, at that point, you're not putting the toothpaste back in the tube.
No.
So why are you counting down? It should at least hold steady at 99999, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a there's a lot of stuff in this movie that it's just you just gotta chalk it up to like cartoon funnies. Like even at the towards the end when George decides like he's gonna go into the machine and all
Oh,
this he pulls
yeah.
out the
You
mat
get the
and all
Charlie
that stuff.
Chaplin stuff. Yeah, you are here. Yeah, it's a very Chaplin-esque type moment as he gets sucked through all the bottles, like that one where he's in the machine. Yeah. There are a lot of moments like that. There is one point where when Mr. Spacely shows up to push the button, I wonder why the button turns to a rectangle instead of a circle. Yeah. All of a sudden the button's different. I don't know. Yeah.
It did seem like this movie they as much as like I guess it's a new story, but it's like they and I guess I'm also have to remember like how far removed this is from like Jetsons. Like I'm sure there were people who didn't tune in who like probably watched the Jetsons when they were kids who didn't
Yeah.
tune back in for the like 1980s new episodes.
They're like, wait, Tiffany's in a movie? Shit, I gotta go see that. Right? Like, all these diehard Tiffany fans, they got dragged out to see this movie for her, but they had no idea what the Jetsons was. Okay.
Because I feel like they put, like, a lot of, I don't know what to call it, like, Jetsons, like, tropes or whatever. Like, even, like,
Get me off this crazy thing, Jane.
Yeah, I think it's on, I think it's on the title, or it's like the end credits of the TV show where George and Astro are on the treadmill or whatever.
Yeah.
Because they throw that in like midway through the movie when they go on the new super treadmill.
Oh, he says it twice in this movie, because there's another point when he's stuck on the conveyor belt.
Oh, yeah.
And Teddy One goes, jogging this early? That's not like Mr. Jetson.
Yeah.
Get me off this crazy thing. Yep. So he says it there, too. Probably just used the same recording from the first time.
They probably just used the recording from, like...
from the original. Yeah, I was kind of thinking that, too. Yeah. So, yeah, the best friends, they have their sleepover, and they decide that they're going to go check on George because he has finally decided to guard the plant. So, this plant, they don't have a security guard. Okay, that's fair. Spacely is a cheapskate, right? He wouldn't want to pay an extra wage, but you're not going to buy some security cameras? How do you not know what is going on in this plant?
It's the 22nd century.
Yeah. You could probably have, like, fucking lipstick cameras everywhere in that place. Holograms, you know, back to your office and stuff. Yeah, you know, like, yeah. They take off, and of course, we get, you know, the little furry guy going with them as well. Fergie goes with them. But when all is said and done, everyone's gone, and Jane realizes that they're missing, and she interrupts Judy's date to get Judy to look for it. Why is it Judy that's checking the plant? Why?
I don't know. I also felt like that was, like, the biggest cock block of all time. Like, really seemed, I don't know, maybe I don't know. Obviously, I wouldn't have thought this when I was a 4-year-old child watching this movie, but
as a
37-year-old man, I was just like, Judy comes off so horny in this movie, like, all the time.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
And especially in this scene, like, it literally sounds like I was just about to get it and I have to go find my brother.
God, Mom, I just want him to pump my guts, Mom. God. You and Dad are finally sleeping in the same bed together. You know what I'm talking about. Because that's another change I noticed. In the original, I'm pretty sure they slept in separate beds, Bert and Ernie style. Yes.
But yeah. Anyways, yeah. I don't know why. Judy is not the person I would send to...
No.
On, like, some sort of expedition to find my lost child.
Yeah, I understand why you send Judy to the mall. Okay, she knows every part of the mall. But she says, and the plant? And Judy's the first to show up. And you know Judy went to the mall first.
Yeah.
And then later on, everyone just kind of shows up. Okay, Astro gave us a clue. So we'll go look into this now. But Judy showed up first. I don't get it. But when they find George, I'm also disappointed that they don't find George. George finds them. They're like, oh, where's George? Oh, there's your dad. And then he comes hopping out all bound and gagged.
Yeah, they kind of like give up on even finding George.
Because yeah.
They're so consumed with like what's happening with the Grungies.
Yeah. Yeah, they really, oh yeah, wait, oh, we were supposed to be looking for something. Yeah, so but Jane's trying to negotiate, but that's when Spacely shows up. Man, his ride there, what a nightmare. When he's squished between those two.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what you get for the cheap flights. But this was another part where I realized what an asshole Spacely was, is that Teddy tries to stop Spacely from pushing the button, and so Spacely unplugs him? That's assault, brother. Like,
no, robots have rights. That took back what I said before.
Yeah, and he was asking why the plant was closed in the middle of the night, and he, you know, he's like, it should be open. Machines don't sleep. He's a fucking racist. Like, first of all, you're saying that in front of this robot, and then you unplug him. It's like, ah, machines, whatever. So, I don't know. I don't know what Teddy's status is anymore. Yeah. He can get unplugged. That's the problem with AI, guys.
I was confused why Mr. Spacely, like, I didn't recall him explaining, like, saying he was going to come. All of a sudden, there's just this scene where he's, like, on his way, and it seemingly just to, like, set up the end. Like, Spacely, for the first part of the movie, doesn't even strike me as somebody who even really cares. Like, yeah. He would just fire George and hire somebody else.
Yeah. No, there is a moment, and this is where he talks to the secretary, who is voiced by the real Judy Jetson, and that's when he says, book me a flight on the cheapest airline you have. There is a moment there. Okay. It's after George destroys the plant for the second time, and then Mr. Spacely magically shows up on like 100 screens in front of him. Jetson, what's going on now? Right? Yeah, that's it's at that point that he storms out and says, okay, book me on the cheapest flight. I gotta go take care of this myself. Yeah.
Gotcha.
But you should have just gone and pushed your own damn button.
Yeah.
Can't trust Jetson. Fuck, you should have gone up there yourself. Because you think it can run 24 hours a day, so you just have to push the button once, really. Yeah. Go up there once, take a vacation.
Yeah, it's kind of funny when he's at first talking to the computer about trying to find a replacement. It's like the qualifications are really so low. It's basically like, who's loyal to the company, good at pressing a button, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't remember the other ones. But
it's like easily manipulated.
Easily manipulated, yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah. No, and it. Is that all work is in the future, is pushing a button?
Seems like it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised, like, these guys, the more I watch the Jetsons, the more I feel like they should all look like the people from WALL-E.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, like floating around in their chairs. Yeah, no, they absolutely should. I mean, they have treadmills taking them everywhere, tubes. Like, they don't have to walk a damn inch if they don't want to.
The one thing that's kind of weird, though, is, like, when they fly their ships, they still have to land them on their feet, Flintstone style.
Yeah. That's true. That's odd.
Like, why wouldn't you just be able to land, get out, press a button, and have it? Like, why does it have to come off on the run?
Mm-hmm. That is a bit of a flaw in the design, I suppose. Yeah. Well, because then you don't have to rely on landing gear. You save money on wheels. Yeah, maybe there's a rubber shortage in the 22nd century.
And they provide just endless knee replacements.
That's right.
So you got to stick that landing pretty hard. I don't know. But I mean, maybe that's ultra light metal. I don't know.
Well, yeah, because it's light enough to pick up and put in a shelf.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's got to be flying around in ultralights. No, they really should be. They've got robots to do all their manual labor, so yeah. What do they do? That's your job. You push a button. Is that literally your job? Why would you want a vice president role? That sounds like more responsibility. You can come in, yeah. Push a button, that's your day work? Come pull up some Netflix on your phone or something, bro. Like I'd be interested to see what Jetsons does look like, though, now. Just with the fact that technology has come so far in 30 years that, like, in 1990, the idea of the internet was not a thing. So some of these...
I was going to say, there's things in this movie, like...
Video calling?
Because it's pre-internet that you're kind of like, oh, well, yeah, like, there's some things that we have now, but actually, like, today...
Yeah,
I feel like I can do more than the Jetsons can. Like,
yeah.
There's not even cell phones really in this movie.
No,
they have, like, I guess they have video calls, but
screens that just still, appear like, out of nowhere.
Big screens.
Yeah, but they got something right. But just even the idea of this, you know, worldwide connectivity, they don't have the right reason yet. So it would just be interesting to see where they take technology. It's like the evolution of a Star Trek series or something. As real technology gets better, the technology you see on the ships gets better.
You know? Yeah, I mean, like, even what you were saying with, like, security systems. Like, in 1990, there probably wasn't the idea of a security system that I could just pull up on my phone and look at, like, 24/7 wherever I wanted to.
Yeah, now I know who's ringing my doorbell. You know, like, from anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
That boggles my mind, the fact that I can order something at 5 a.m. from Amazon and it shows up on my step that afternoon if it's the right thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Nuts.
Yeah. Okay, now the one thing I don't understand is the final agreement that they have, because it sounds like the idea is that they're going to keep mining their own home, but in exchange they get to live in the factory. Is that the deal we've got worked out?
That's what it seemed like at first, but then as it's like fading towards like the end, they put in that like it sounds like instead of mining, that they're going to recycle old sprockets. But like,
that's not that. Yeah, that's and not the agreement you made originally.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it does seem like, oh, these people are just gonna, they're just gonna destroy themselves, I guess, but at least they'll profit off of it.
Yeah.
And they can all go live in the, like, galactic apartments or whatever it is instead.
I mean, it does seem like a Jane idea, because as part of the environmental message of this 1990 movie, they made sure that Jane had this recycling crusade going on throughout the movie as well. So it was clearly her idea, but originally it just sounded like, hey, they will run the factory for you. But for me, running the factory means we're going to keep drilling into our homes. We're going to strip mine our own homes. Wait a minute. Yeah, like what? One of these grungies was like, this is a bad idea, right? Like maybe we should invest in some recycling equipment. How about that? Polish these old ones up. They'll look good.
I was just thinking, like, what the part of the plan that's missing is, okay, where are the old sprockets coming from? This is a new sprocket creating plant. Like, so what like through what agreement are old sprockets coming to be recycled?
So are they sending some of the grungies out into the world to like purposely sabotage and bend some sprockets out in the real world so that all these companies are like, oh, geez, we need some more sprockets. We'll ship all these back, you know. They get a discount on their new sprockets.
I mean, honestly, like in today's eyes, the idea of there even being sprockets in use in the year, like, 2020, what, like, 2000, is, like, that's not going to be a real, there's not going to be sprockets.
No.
But anyways, aside from that, like, my thought, I guess, would be that I assume they would also be having to operate some sort of importing, like, they're exporting sprockets, but importing used sprockets to recycle and then refurbish to send back out. Like, there's got to be some sort of shipping and receiving plan here.
I want to see the long-term
business
model. Yeah. how you're going to make this profitable, you know?
Like, something just doesn't add up. They're cooking the books.
They are. Spacely's into something else, I tell you. Yeah. Now, I can't believe I jumped over this, but I have to talk about one song specifically, and that's the weird one where... Did he dose Judy Jetson with acid in that one song that they're singing together in the garden, where it like suddenly turns into like this, I don't know.
Where they're like walking through and like everybody's it looks like an orgy is about to break out at any moment because there's
where at one point they like fly through a wall and it turns into like white geometric shapes. And
This is just like a late 80s, early 90s acid trip movie whenever Judy gets on screen.
It was so random. Like, it was obviously just an opportunity to get Tiffany to sing in this movie. I mean, that's why you hire Tiffany for this movie, right? But it was just, it was weird, and it's like, what's going on? I don't understand. I know.
Did Tiffany go on to like appear in any other movie after this? Like, did she have any semblance of an acting career?
No, but funny enough, I have this weird addiction to certain shows. Like, I was really into Storage Wars for a while. Yep, I sure was. And Flea Market Flip was one that I was into. And that's where you send these people out to a flea market to pick up some shit, and then they take it back to a shop and remake it, refurbish it, and then go out to another flea market to sell their shit. And it's all about who can make the biggest profit. And one episode, Tiffany just happened to be a customer at this flea market that they were selling their wares at, and ended up buying one of their goods. And I'm like, holy shit, Tiffany, what the fuck? Just randomly on Flea Market Flip. But I doubt she had any kind of career. I think she's probably appeared as herself a couple times.
They should have taken the opportunity to get like whichever of the Knight brothers she dated to play the two-tone blue guy. I can't even remember his name. Maddie Mercury or whatever his name is. I don't even remember.
Oh, she was in Ted 2.
Oh, right, yeah.
As Tiffany. Yeah. She was in Mega Python versus Gatoroid. She was in Mega Piranha. She was in Necrosis. One episode of The Young and the Restless is a Christmas Caroler. Well, she was a Catholic schoolgirl on How I Met Your Mother. She was in an episode of that 80s show. Yeah, so not illustrious, but she's appeared in a few things, and only one of them she's actually listed as Tiffany. Like plain Tiffany, so
good for her.
Yeah, and Flea Market Flip. So there we go. So the Jetsons, they, you know, just after making all these brand new friends, just after getting Judy to shut up about her old boyfriend, they're off again so that she can like whine and complain about losing her new boyfriend again. And they get the send off, and we get that computer animated of the Thanks George, where it's just it was like very Microsoft Paint like with what you were saying about the cheapness of the special or of the computer animation. That's one where maybe it should have gone 2D on that one, guys.
Yeah, I wish I could remember what line it was, but there was one line that George says that I was like, it was towards the end that I thought, like, knowing that the
George Hanlon
died. Yeah. I was like, oh, like that's kind of what a nice send off. I hope they played it at his funeral. He says something about like how he's like not ready to go, or like, or how he's like happy to go, or something like that. Or
yeah,
I can't remember. I wish I would have written it down, but
it's like having Alan Rickman quoted as saying always, you know, like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's a better one. It's a better swan song. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do like, see, unlike the other rap song, I kind of like the Jetsons rap song that plays as they're flying
at the
home
end. Yeah.
With the credits. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, and then the end, and we get the credits with all the pictures. And then at the very end, we get a sort of a pseudo post-credits scene where it's Astro saying, I love you, George. Like, just at the very end of the credits, you know, kind of like Iron Man dinging his anvil, that kind of thing. Just an audio post-credit thing. But at least this movie, unlike Almost Heroes, did say, you know, for George O'Hanlon and Mel Blanc. Like, you know, at least it said that right off the bat. So, Almost Heroes let me down with no Chris Farley dedication.
No respect, I tell you.
No respect. Yeah. And there we go. That's Jetsons the movie. Now calling on IMDb, it scored 5.5 out of 10. Not a lot of love for Jetsons. And a Metascore of 46. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 27% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 45%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like sticking your finger in a hole that says, do not stick your finger in this hole. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. This is 1.5 out of 5 stars. As a Hanna-Barbera fan, this was depressingly dull and awkward. I think they had squeezed out every last idea possible by this point in their careers and were fresh out of steam. I wanted to love this movie, but it's unbearable.
Wow. Oh, okay. That comes to an abrupt end, but it's like, yeah, no, that's a 1.5 rating. That's what that is.
Here's another 1.5. Sigh. Yet another childhood memory ruined by curiosity.
Oh.
Here's a 2 out of 5. I will give it credit that the animation is decent for what it is, but good-looking visuals do not make up for a garbage script, a stupid and overly preachy environmental message, and a group of characters that are very hard to find likable.
Yeah, that's something that I didn't bring up because we spent more time trashing the computer animation more than praising the 2D animation. It was well animated. It was a pretty movie to look at. Mm-hmm. And I do remember the fact that when I first saw this back in theaters, back in 1990, this was the first time that I had ever seen a cartoon that I grew up with where suddenly there was shading and, like, you know, like just all this detail to things like that with the shadows and everything like that. And it's kind of like what The Simpsons did with The Simpsons movie. You can always tell when it's a cartoon movie event, like when it's something special. And so it was, yeah, it is nice to look at. I agree with that review there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Super reviewer Brendan N says 2 out of 5 stars. Firmly stuck in the 80s, this film adaptation of the TV is humorless and jam-packed full of music that the future will easily forget. This could have been one of the better TV show to movie conversions, but some poor direction hurts the film instead of pushing it forward. The voice acting from the younger characters is a tad over the top and very poor at times, especially the younger boy Jetson. It's interesting to see where The Simpsons discovered some blueprints, but for story or character development, this film really misses the point. Fingers crossed for a remake.
How long ago was that they're saying fingers crossed for a remake?
It was 2016.
Okay.
2 out of 5 stars. You could do worse than Jetsons the movie. I mean, especially by today's standards, but if you ever want to see an animated movie that just doesn't stand the test of time, this is for you. It's an 80s movie inside and out. I didn't even think that was possible for a show about the future.
Yeah, holiday time got away from me, and so unfortunately I didn't watch this one with my kids, but I would have been interested to see their perspective on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The last one I have is 2.5 out of 5 stars. The cartoon was never a favorite of mine, as it always just seemed a tad boring for my taste. I couldn't stand the Spacely character and his need to scream everything either. So basically, this is nothing but a good 3 TV episodes strung together. It does nothing different than the show did, just makes it longer, most of which is letting Tiffany, playing Judy, do a bunch of singing. The bad guys or threat of the film turn out not to be a very big issue, and the love story between Judy and her guys horribly developed. The animation is on par with the show, and if you love the show, I'm sure you would enjoy this. I found it to be just okay, tad boring to be exact.
It's 3 episodes strung together, and each episode begins with a sabotage moment.
Yeah.
Each act begins with a sabotage.
There we go.
Right on. So yeah, Jetsons the movie. I still love the Jetsons. I don't love this movie anymore. The music was, most of it was just out of place. Like the Sprocket rap was just completely unnecessary. You know, like slipping in like the diegetic music at the one point with Rick Dees there, where he's like, "Here's something to get you to work, George," and then, you know, we get a little bit of a song, and then, you know, it disappears when his car shrinks. you know, things like that are okay, but like, yeah, Judy's garden song, I didn't necessarily need the rap, I didn't necessarily need, but and it was fine, you know, it was okay. It was a nice throwback, but God, Judy annoyed the shit out of me. The thing is with this movie, I immediately after watching this, I put in Jetsons Meet the Flintstones, and I had so much more fun. Like, yeah, that was such a better movie than Jetsons the movie. But boy, did I love this when I was younger. It's just, it's a Jetsons episode that is not a good Jetsons episode. You know, it's, it was okay. It was fine. I'm glad I resaw it, but boy, a little bit of me died watching this movie. Like, it just, a little bit of my childhood died because I loved it so hard, and it's like, ooh, why?
Yeah. Yeah, I...
Still pretty, you know? Yeah. Yeah. Final thoughts, Colin.
I don't know. I agree with pretty much all the reviews I read. I just thought it was boring at the end of the day. I struggled to make it through this movie. Like, I was almost just going to, like, stop and be like, I think I remember how it ends. Like, I'm just going to turn it off and go. Like, I just thought it...
I fell asleep once.
It doesn't... It very much just seems like the television show, which I guess maybe that's what people wanted in the 90s.
Yeah.
But I feel like... I don't... Look, I've watched too much Paw Patrol in the last 3 years since my daughter's been born.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, the show is one thing, but when you get to that movie, those movies are like... Like, it's just, that's, you know, they, it's like, it's elevated. It's visibly... Story-wise, like, everything about it is elevated for those feature films.
Yeah, and not just because Friend of the Pod Will Brisbane
is in one of them. But it's
true.
That's what you need to do when you take a TV show to a movie.
Yeah.
And this one just didn't do it. Like, the idea of people, to me, of people going to a movie theater and spending the, like, movie theater money to watch this is, like, insanity to me. Like,
well, it was only $4 back then for me, you know?
I guess. Inflation, though. But this is like, a made-for-TV movie at best.
Yeah.
And I guess I understand. It seems like it was kind of, like, the last hurrah to get all the original actors together for one last thing. Like, I can see it from that aspect, but I'm just, like... Part of me thinks, like, with properties like this, like, the goal usually of taking a TV from a feature film to a movie is to kind of, like, bring it to new eyes so that, like, maybe a new audience will now go back and, like, check out the cartoon. And I just
maybe
don't
we
think
we can have the new adventures of the Jetsons. Yeah, yeah, if it goes well enough.
I just don't think that this movie does anything to accomplish that. I think this movie is a snooze fest. The story is, like, so weak.
They kind of phone it in a little bit.
Judy alone will make me never watch this movie ever again. she's just an insufferable character.
And it's just, and like, we gotta go with what we got before George dies. Like,
and the other thing is, there's this, like, weird underlying thing where you kind of think the movie is gonna be about how George is, like, edging into workaholism and like ignoring his family, and
yeah,
like at some point they should all get upset with him and, like, I don't know, like, put him in his place, but they never really do that, like, not strongly anyways. And then it's just, like, not even really a Jetsons movie. Like, the family doesn't really do anything together. Like,
well, like, even with what you said there with the workaholic idea, is that the movie opens with a conflict because
he lets
Elroy down, you know, by not showing up to his space ball, but you haven't given me any evidence to show me that this isn't who he is up to this point.
Yeah.
He says, oh, for sure, I'll be there. And so it's like, isn't he already kind of a drifting dad, or, you know, like, inattentive dad, or workaholic, he has to push that button.
Yeah, even to your point about the end, how they just find George. Like, George should have been the one to find Elroy.
Yeah.
Like, he should have been the one to be like, oh, I've let my son down so many times, but not this time. I'm going to find my boy and bring him back to safety. But
that's true.
He just randomly shows up, like, because he's been kidnapped, I guess, by the Grungies or something. I don't know.
Now, I mean, earlier you did say, I don't know what it is that draws people to the theaters to actually pay money to see this, because, you know, it's TV movie quality. No, it's The Shadows.
The Shadows.
It's The Shadows. You're paying for The Shadows and the computer animation. Because, like, I'll tell you that although I enjoyed the story of Jetsons Meet the Flintstones better, I was missing The Shadows.
All right. I'll take your word for it.
It wasn't as pretty. No matter what, this was a pretty movie. But
it is crazy, though, think about it now, because you could, with, like, I don't know how people would feel about it, but with AI, you could make a Jetsons movie with the original cast and like, make it better if you really wanted to.
If you really wanted to.
But I also think, like, now, like, I'll say this. I'm going to end on this. I am not done with the Jetsons. I think that now is the time for the, like, we have the skill, we have the ability, we have the graphics, the computer animation, you know, the money, and the ability to make a great live-action Jetsons movie, and I think that we should do it.
That's true. I agree. I'm not done with the Jetsons. Just, please, if you make the Jetsons the movie, like, a new one, let's not have Chris Pratt as George Jetson.
No. You know who I would honestly... Who would you...
I mean, Mario Garfield? Come on! Chris Pratt can't do every voice in animation.
Well, are you saying you want to animate it or make it live action?
Oh, we could do live action. Let's not have Chris Pratt as George Jetson.
Like, if I'm live actioning the Jetsons, I think...
Okay, let's fan cast. Like, let's go out on a fan cast, yeah. Okay.
My top three George Jetsons...
Oh, boy.
Okay, I'm going to say Ty Burrell. Like, Phil Dunphy.
Ooh, yes, yes, okay.
I could also get on board with... who's the guy who plays Hopper in Stranger Things?
Oh, David, no.
What's his name? David Harbour. David Harbour.
David Harbour, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
He's beefy, though.
He is beefy, but I still...
You need someone lanky.
Maybe he's more of a Fred Flintstone.
Like you could almost have, like, a Justin Long.
Justin Long, yeah. For some reason, like, who immediately popped into my mind, but I was thinking, like, Malcolm in the Middle era is Bryan Cranston.
Yes,
but yeah. I like Ty Burrell would probably be my top. I think
Ty Burrell would be a good choice. Yeah, Jane Jetson,
Elizabeth Banks. That she immediately just comes to mind.
Elizabeth Banks. Yeah, that could be an Elizabeth Banks. Judy Jetson. I mean, it feels like it's gonna be Jenna Ortega, no matter what else you say.
Judy, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Judy, it's like, I don't know teenage actresses well enough these days. Zendaya, yeah, like...
Sydney Sweeney? Like, Sydney Sweeney, she'd be good.
Yeah. Elroy would be, like, Walker Scobell, because that's the only, like, kid actor I know right now. Because Finn Wolfhard is getting too old.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's where the fantasy cast falls apart, is it's like, yeah, the teenagers are hard to do.
Yeah, like, I feel like if you do live action, then you almost have to have, like, Elroy be, like 15, not, like, super young, and have Judy be, like, college age. Yeah. That would be where, if you wanted to do, like, that's good animation, then they could be, like, their actual, like...
Okay, now, here's the question, though. Astro, CGI dog? Or like, a live dog that has, like, CGI'd, like, facial expressions.
See, Astro would be where I would kind of want it to be more. Like, if it was live action, I think I'd be tempted to say Astro has to be a robot dog and not a real dog, but that might be controversial.
Yeah, that's true. All the purists out there. Yeah, because I look at something like a Garfield movie where Garfield is fully animated and then Odie is like just a regular wiener dog. And it's like, no, where's long-necked Odie?
Yeah.
It makes me wonder whether, yeah. Same with Rosie. Rosie, do you just CGI Rosie the robot?
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, there we go. That's Jetsons the movie, and that's our show. That doesn't feel like the best thing to go out on, though. Jeez, that fantasy casting fell apart.
Ty Burrell for George.
Ty Burrell for George. Hashtag Ty Burrell for George. And there we go. That's Jetsons the movie, and that's our show for the week. Oh, boy. If you like that show, just tell someone. Share our posts. Word of mouth just helps spread so much word of mouth for the show. See, fuck. I was word doing well on that.
Helps spread words in the mouth.
That's right. And then it gets into other people's ear holes, and they know about it because their brain transfers those ears. Science! I don't know. Tell people about the show, or go over to whatever app you listen to your podcast on and give us some stars and help drive us up some charts. Or if you want to be a producer and donate to the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become part of our Patreon family, and then you get a shout out like executive producer Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
Check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. No, that's not our website. That's our email. You can go to our email, iusedlikethisone@gmail.com, and drop us a line and let us know what movies you used to like. Or you can check out our website, www.iusedlikethisone.com, and check out all our social media pages and words podcast episodes. Words are hard today.
We had holiday break.
Yeah.
Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Oh, boy. This train rolls on. I don't know which way I want to go next week. Do we want to continue on like the family movie animation sort of train, or do we want to hop over to another comedy?
Comedy.
Comedy?
Classic comedy. Well, then
next week, we are celebrating the posthumously released from the beloved John Candy. Oh, Colin, I can't wait, because we've talked about this many times on the show.
What movie are we watching again?
Canadian Bacon.
Canadian Bacon. I was like, I couldn't remember if it was Canadian Bacon or Wagon's Yeast. I wasn't sure which one we landed on.
That's true, yes, because, yes, John Candy had two posthumously released movies, but no, we are doing Canadian Bacon, which is a little niche, I think, for some people, but... As a Canadian, I've always loved it, and it surprises me that it is a Michael Moore movie of all things.
Like Michael Moore of
Fahrenheit 9/11, Bowling for Columbine, Michael Moore, yeah. Like Kevin from The Office dressed up for Halloween, Michael Moore. Yeah.
I did not know that he made real movies.
Yeah, I don't know how many of them, but this is... This is at least one, so I'm excited, though. I love Canadian Bacon.
Like, I've seen it back in the day, but I don't remember it very well.
It's one of those ones that makes me feel seen as a Canadian. I don't know what it is. You know, it's like when you go to a concert and they shout out your hometown. They're like, Edmonton! Make some noise! Right? Like, it just, it's kind of how it feels like, they mentioned Canada. They know we exist.
That's my town. I live
That's
there.
That's my town. Fuck, I mean, I remember an episode of How I Met Your Mother where we found out that Robin was from Edmonton, I think, or spent some time in Edmonton or something like that. Yeah. Edmonton was name dropped on that show. Yeah. It was awesome. But yeah, Canadian Bacon, John Candy, more John Candy. This is our year of John Candy, because I think we're going to squeeze a few into the lineup this year. Infuse more John Candy into our lives.
We should keep like four floor in the chamber for like next November, and then we can have Candyvember.
Candyvember.
I feel like we should save November for whatever actor just we've done most of their films, Denver? and just try to like knock them all, knock all the ones that we haven't hit out, just so that we can.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool Runnings, Armed and Dangerous. Yeah, we got a few Candyvembers. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, that could be fun. Well, there we go. So until next week, then, I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart.
And we will see you for Canadian Bacon on I Used to Like This One. It's awesome. I had Canadian bacon left over in the fridge, and I was actually eating Canadian bacon while watching Canadian Bacon today. I was eating candy while watching John Candy. It was crazy. Cool. Well, I'm ready whenever you are. I'm recording on all my devices. Okay. I've got July 6th, 1990.
Right, yeah. The date is July 6th, 1990, and we're watching... Oh, hold on. I couldn't remember if it was Jetsons the movie or The Jetsons the movie. All right, Jetsons the movie.
Yeah, it would. I thought about that too at one point for some reason, and I'm like, no, that would be dumb. The Jetsons the movie, right? Yeah, they wouldn't have done that, right? I remember at one point looking it up myself.
All right.